You've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my husband and kids just gave me an executive order. Stylish new outfits now. Where do I go?
Get to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, get up to 50% off store-wide during Old Navy's big President's Day sale.
Up to 50% off store-wide? I won't veto that.
Old Navy's fashion-forward jeans start at just $15 for adults, $10 for kids. And colorful fleece starts at just $15 for adults, $12 for kids at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. But hurry, the sale ends soon.
Well, just call me Shopper-in-Chief. We're going to Old Navy now.
High Fashion. Old Navy. Valid 212 through 220. Select styles only.
Angels, ghosts, and Bigfoot. Oh my. It's just another night for Supernatural Girls. Real stories, real answers to life's biggest supernatural mysteries. And now for another exciting interview with paranormal experts from this world and others. Here's your host, paranormal researcher Patricia Baker, on the one, the only Supernatural Girls.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of Supernatural Girls Radio. I'm your host, Patricia Baker. I am here with my co-host, Patricia Kirkman, PK. And you're back in Tucson tonight.
You know what? I miss you. I miss your food. I miss you more, but I miss your food, too.
Well, didn't we have a great time with you out
here? Oh, we did. It was wonderful.
It was so great. And it's hard to say goodbye, but I wanted to make your stay as comfortable as possible. And that's why we imported those 2-pound lobsters for everybody.
And
so
I forced myself to eat them. It was such a chore. And of course, the wine wasn't bad either.
No, the wine was good. It was a wonderful time.
Spoiled rotten, and I loved every minute of it.
Well, good. We want you out here more often. We'll spoil you more often. How's that?
Okay. Is
that
I'm deal about or it now. Sounds good.
Okay.
That's good.
That was a lot of fun having you here. So we've got so much to talk about. We have an incredible guest tonight.
Yes, we do.
I'm going to warn you guys, this book, it's called Physicians Untold Stories. It is by Dr. Scott J. Kolbaba. He is an amazing writer, and he has stories here. I had to get my Kleenex out. I really did. All amazing, moving stories, doctors touched by the divine and willing to talk about it, willing to share it with us. We're going to bring him on in a few minutes. So get ready. It's going to be a great show, and you're going to learn a lot about how doctors embody this, how they reach out, and how they share their experiences with the spirit. So it's just amazing stuff, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely fabulous. It held your attention. It was like watching everything going so fast, and you go, oh, got it quick. Let me catch that one. What did I miss? And then go back to the next one. The book is fabulous.
It is so well done. And again, I can't wait to get Dr. Kolbaba on the show. So, but first, we got to check in with the numbers. What in the world's going on? We got retrograde.
Well, that's about it. The retrograde's the key to pay attention to right now. Let's face it, as we all know, this month represents everybody's last year. Whatever happened last year, you're getting an opportunity to tidy it up, put it together, and get rid of what you can. But right now we went into retrograde as of the 13th, and we will be in retrograde until September 5th. So unless you're born in a retrograde, we're fair game for electronics breaking down, messages to be transposed, things lost. It is chaotic. Do under no circumstance anything that's legal that has to be put together for the long haul, because it's all going to change.
It'll have to be redone, right?
That is definitely a case where it'll be redone. And don't throw your electronics away that isn't working right now. Put it on a shelf. Try it afterwards. You might be surprised. It may work again.
Well, that's the good part of it.
Yes. Well, that's the best part of it. But it's difficult because everyone wants it to be just right. And the harder we try to make it perfect, the more we mess up everything. It's just not. cars, if we take a look at everything's computer generated, our cars today. I've had three people call me today, and I've only been back since last night. They're having problems with their printer, with their cars starting because there's a computer chip. So right. There we go again.
Yes. So everybody's going to have to take a deep breath over the next few weeks until this is over. So here we go. Right?
That's for sure. Yes.
Now, we've got some news about Tucson, of all places, where you
yes.
are.
I'm checking
it's not
my,
good.
No, I'm checking my fingers.
They have found fleas with the bubonic plague in Tucson. This is not good.
No, it is not.
No, so we want to stay away from fleas in Tucson, right? To stay healthy. That's
stay
scary
away from
thing.
A lot of things.
Yeah.
it's scary because what's that story? Everything old is new again. This
yes.
is not one of those things that you want to be new again.
No, you do not. No, absolutely not. But then on another brighter side, we saw a story that we have posted on our Facebook page. Got Supernatural Girls has a great Facebook page with lots of stories on it about floating crystals. Mm-hmm. Now, that was a wild story. So for everybody, there are photographs, there are videos of these floating crystals on our Facebook page. Again, go to Supernatural Girls, give us a like, follow us on Facebook, and you'll get to see all these amazing stories. So go check that story out. It is very, very unusual. It's called Levitating Rocks, and it's at a crystal mine in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And they have a whole big story there of what's happening with these crystals. It has really spooked these people. So go check that out. And, of course, we have our usual UFO sightings more than ever.
Yes.
That is happening all over the place, and people with their camera phones are posting pictures, videos, and amazing, amazing things are going on in the world today with UFOs. We don't need disclosure, do we? We already know. So we're all set.
With everyone with a camera in hand, you can't hide anything anymore.
You cannot.
After all, Big Brother's watching regardless, so now let's get the good pictures to go along with it.
That's right. So we want to also have you visit creativestrength.us. Tom Palladino is offering his 15-day free scalar treatment. You don't have to give a credit card or anything. Just send your picture over to Tom, and he will do his scalar treatment for you. Again, that's creativestrength.us. So take a visit over there, and we've got some great books on our website, including the one we're going to be talking about tonight with Dr. Scott Kolbaba, which is called Physicians Untold Stories. So we're going to bring Dr. Kolbaba on the show in about 1 minute. Now, let me just tell you a little about who we're talking to tonight.
Right.
He is an MD. He's in practice in Wheaton, Illinois, and he completed his residency at the famous Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. He is the father of 7 wonderful children. And he also has a beautiful Newfoundland dog and now a kitten we just heard about who wants to be friends with the Newfoundland or maybe vice versa. But anyways, we're going to find out all about these great stories tonight. So, Dr. Kolbaba, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Pat. It's great to be here. Thanks, PK.
We're so lucky to have you with us tonight.
We really are. So tell us a little bit about you, because you had an interesting experience starting out learning to be a doctor. You were kind of told you shouldn't be a doctor, right?
Yeah, that was a very interesting experience. I started out in pre-med in college, and then I ended up in economics because some of the classes I was taking were what I thought were pretty boring, and people told me that this is exactly what medical school would be like. And I thought, if this is what medical school is going to be like, I'm going to be an economist. So I switched my page to economics. I graduated, and my grades weren't sterling. I wasn't a great student at the time. But I finished school, and I got out and started working. And then I realized one day that I didn't want to do this, and I wanted to go back to medical school. Well, that required prerequisite courses and a number of things. And I applied with only a B average and some poor MCAT scores, the test you take before medical school. And I interviewed with the dean of one of the prestigious medical schools in Chicago. And I thought, this is a great thing. This is one of the most powerful men in medicine in Chicago at the time. And I was really excited to meet with him. And he looked at all my credentials and looked at everything. And we had a nice talk. And at the end of the interview, he said, "Mr. Kobaba, I'm afraid to tell you, you just don't have what it takes to become a doctor. You should change your career aspirations and get on with your life."
Oh, Lord.
And that was incredibly depressing for about a week. My wife recognized my bad mood. She tried to encourage me. But after about a week, I thought, well, you know, I can go to night school. I can get some classes. I can get the prerequisites. I'll improve my MCAT scores. And I'm going to do this. And it, actually, his negative comments were the greatest incentive I could ever have. And I became a student on fire. I studied like crazy. I was studying night and day. I improved my MCAT scores from about the 20th percentile to over the 90th percentile. Got some great grades in my night classes. And I ultimately got in. And the interesting thing about that, Pat, is... I decided, you know, you do medical school for 4 years, then you do your residency in my specialty, it's 3 years. And I did my first year residency at the same institution that he was at. And it was very interesting. Talk about getting back quietly. Mm-hmm. I was awarded the intern of the year. And guess who had to present the...
What fabulous. Justice.
A lot of questions there. So that was kind of interesting. I got a kick out of that. And
I bet so.
Incredible, huh? Oh, my God.
That was
interesting. Was he surprised? Did you see a big shocked look on his face?
Yeah, I think he remembered me. And I think that was a surprising kind of a turn of events. So you never know, you know, and that's taught me that the power of the human spirit is unbelievable.
It is. It's unflappable. And certainly you took a situation which could have been extremely discouraging, and you could have lived with that for the rest of your life. But you turned it around and you made it exactly what you wanted it to be. So what an achievement. Amazing.
It was a lot of work, but it was worth it. And like I said, sometimes a negative review and a negative opinion is all the incentive you need. And that was for me. I just was amazing after that.
That
I could stop
great.
It. Yeah.
That's great. And so that your wife must have been happy to see you apply yourself and do what you really wanted to do as well. That's terrific.
Yeah, she gave up. She was an anthropologist, and she gave up a dig in the Yucatan. When I announced I wanted to go to medical school, she said, "Okay, I'll work and put you through school, and I'll give up my opportunity to want to dig in anthropology." So it's kind of a mixed blessing there, but she appreciates what I've done, and she was a great help to me. She was a great support.
Sounds like
wonderful.
You're good partners, very good partners,
good team, amazing. Mm-hmm. So now that brings us to this amazing book that you've written that has touched our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Just incredible. Now, what made you want to do a book like this, Dr. Kobaba? What was it that brought you to this place?
I always thought writing a book might be fun and interesting. And so I thought I had a few experiences myself that were really a little bit on the edge of normal. And then I had a couple doctors come up to me, and these are stories that are amazing stories, even to me, and even when I talk about them, I still get sometimes emotional because they're such amazing stories. And I've never heard stories like this before this from doctors. You hear about potassiums and gallbladders and all the kinds of things that doctors talk about with patients and making a diagnosis or missing a diagnosis or whatever. But we don't talk about deep spiritual things like this. But for some reason, after I had a couple experiences myself, a couple doctors started to got me aside and told me these stories. One was an interesting story from Steve Heim, who's an orthopedic surgeon who's also a trauma surgeon. He was skiing with his wife and his wife's sister in Colorado, and they found a new mountain they'd never skied down. They were expert skiers. They got up to the top of the mountain. A blizzard hit, and they could hardly see anything in front of them. The temperature dropped. The snow was coming down like crazy, but they had to ski down. So they started skiing down, and they about halfway down, they came to a grove of trees. They had to go to the right or the left. Dr. Heim, Steve went to the right and the girls went to the left, and they didn't know they were separated for a few seconds until Dr. Heim realized that, then decided to ski back through the trees to get to the girls. And while he was skiing through the trees, he suddenly felt this very, very uneasy and uncomfortable feeling in his chest, like something dreadful was happening, like he was being called on to do something that had life and death proportions. So he stopped skiing. The girls were still waiting for him on the other side. He suspected that, but he just stopped skiing, and everything became silent. The wind was blowing, the snow was coming down, but it was an eerie silence. He could hear himself breathing. He could hear the crunch of the snow, which was very cold on his skis and his feet. He took off his skis, and he stood there for a minute, not knowing what to do. And then he did something amazing and surprising. He started to walk up the mountain, up. Climb, walk. The girls were in the opposite direction, and he's walking away from them, and for an unknown reason. After about 100 feet, he came to a large pine tree with a tree well that goes down to the base of the tree, and then it comes up to the 5 feet of snow that was surrounding the trees. And he stood there for a second, then they looked down, and then he suddenly realized why he was there. Under the tree was a body covered in snow.
My God.
Mm. He brushed off, you know, he's a trauma surgeon, so what a coincidence that a trauma surgeon would happen to be at the site of major trauma. So he brushed off the fellow's face, and it looked like he was dead. He had a gray face, he didn't look like he was breathing, but a trauma surgeon, it knows what to do. So he put his hand on his carotid artery to see if he had a pulse, and sure enough, he had a pulse. It was a weak, thready pulse, but it was a pulse. So he immediately went into trauma mode. He brushed the snow off this hapless skier that had hit the tree, covered him with his two jackets, started yelling for help, put his head down, all the things a trauma surgeon would do. And one of the last skiers down the mountain must have heard his cries for help. And he came to his side and he said, "What can I do?" Dr. Heim said, "Go down and call the ski patrol as soon as you can find a phone, or get to the lodge, or get someone up here as soon as possible. This fellow's ready to die any minute."
My goodness.
About 20 minutes later, a snowmobile with a gurney behind it was driven by the snow patrol, and they came up and loaded this unconscious skier under the gurney, brought him down to the ambulance waiting at the lodge, and took him off to the hospital. Meantime, Dr. Heim, who's now got tons of adrenaline on board, is shaking with adrenaline, mm-hmm. and also with cold, and covered himself back up and skied over to where the girls were. They skied down the mountain to the lodge. The next day, he called the hospital to find out what happened to the skier, and they said, "You did a great job splinting his leg. He had a broken leg, and Dr. Heim splinted it in the field with a tree branch and some undergarments. And he's alive. He's well. He's speaking."
Wow.
There's no serious damage at all. He was unconscious from hitting the tree and hypothermic. Had you not found him, no one would have found him till the springtime, probably.
Oh, my God.
So,
wow.
So Dr. Heim said to me about this, he said, I know now that there's something higher than us that has directed me to this skier, because it didn't make any sense that I would be climbing up a mountain in the middle of a blizzard. And he literally saved the skier.
It's incredible. Yes.
It is fascinating.
And that he listened. He listened to something else talking to him about going up that mountain. Because, like you just said, why go up a mountain in a blizzard? It didn't make any logical sense at all.
No, it didn't. And away from the girl, so nothing made any sense. He felt so compelled, though, that he told me he could not do anything but that. You know, I think we all get little premonitions and little hints of things, and some of those are interesting and some of those may be meaningful, but someone was shouting at him to climb up that mountain, and he couldn't do anything but. And so that's what happened to him. And after I heard that story and a couple others from doctors that just happened by coincidence, I guess, to come to me, I decided to meet with, first, let me back up a little bit. Doctors have patients in every profession you can imagine, including the oldest profession, I suspect. And so I have a publisher in my practice, and I called my publisher up, and I said, "I've got some stories I'd like to talk with you about, because I don't know if they'd make a good book. Can you have lunch with me, and I'll tell you a few stories, and tell me what you think, honestly?" And he said, "Okay, I'll be honest with you. I'll tell you exactly what I think." So we had lunch. I told him a few of these stories, and I was eating and busy telling the stories and eating and didn't pay much attention to him until he stopped eating. And he sat there for a bit, and I looked up to see what was going on, and he had tears in his eyes.
Aww.
And his name is Scott, just like mine. That's why I like him so much. And I said, Scott, do you really think these are good stories? And I said, these are amazing stories. You have to write these down. You have to publish a book. And so that's what started the. And then I would hang out in the doctor's lounge after that and get doctors and ask them if they had any unusual stories that they couldn't explain scientifically. Mm-hmm. And there were lots of stories that doctors don't talk about. And so
we don't think of doctors that way also. So you're allowing us an insight with doctors that I don't think we've ever had before. I mean, we think of doctors, as you wrote about in the book, as men and women of science, mm-hmm. that go by the facts, you know, go by the AMA way. And we don't necessarily think of doctors as having experiences like this. So you've really opened up our world
My world, too, because, again, doctors don't talk about this. Up until the last 5 or 6 years, I never have heard anything like this before, and suddenly I started to hear these stories, and it was shocking to me and amazing to me. And one of the sections in the book is a section on what I learned about docs and talking to docs about these intimate, deep spiritual stories, which was just a eye-opener to me and amazing to me.
It is amazing. Now, is there any room for this in medical school?
I think there is, and I think we're seeing more and more studies about things like prayer, for example, and does prayer make a difference in healing, and does a positive attitude make a difference? And I think we're going to be seeing more and more this kind of thing in medical school. And my hope in writing this book was also that I'd like to get doctors talking about these things more and more, so that maybe that will open a dialogue between doctors and patients, and also in medical schools and medical education.
Well, it's an important subject. Yeah. And as you mentioned, and you know, you get from a lot of these stories that you're telling, it's the difference between life and death sometimes. I mean, here's a perfect example that you just gave us of this doctor listening to the divine voice and going in an opposite direction of logic and rationale. And so that has to be, I think, encouraged. And who wouldn't want a doctor like that, you know, who's listening to a higher voice than just whatever you learned in medical school? I mean, it's really, it gives us as patients a sense of comfort that that's a possibility.
It's interesting, though, Pat, that many of the doctors, when I talk with them, were really afraid to share these stories for fear that they would be criticized for being a little different, for having an unusual experience, for believing in something beyond science. And so that was a great concern with almost every doctor, including myself. I was a little worried, what would my patients say about this? Would they think I was a little strange or different or something and not want to be involved with me in the practice? And just the opposite happened. It was very surprising. We had a launch for the book, and lots of the doctors showed up. And they were treated like returning heroes, that they had opened up
that's wonderful.
Avenue that has never been touched before. And the reason I think they were is because most people, I'm convinced, either personally or through their families, have had stories of unusual things that have happened to them, their loved ones, someone that had died, that they want to share too. And they have recognized that when these doctors came out with these stories, that it was okay for them to share their stories too. And I hear that in the office all the time. I have people tell me their stories, which are absolutely amazing in many cases.
That is so wonderful. So you've opened up a brand new dialogue all the way around for everybody, and how healing it is that you've done this. And oh my goodness, you've got so many wonderful stories here. Now, the one that touched me the most was the story about the woman with MS. She only had, the doctors thought, she's got a week and she's gone. She had been through a lot. She had had MS for many years. But please tell us a little bit about that story. I cried so hard. I mean, it was just a great story.
This is Barbara Kaminsky, who is a Wheaton resident who moved away this has happened about 20 some years ago. And she moved away. And the interesting part of this story, before I get into the story, Pat, is that I had trouble finding her in the country. I had all kinds of search engines that I purchased and looking for patients because I needed permission to publish her story. And it's interesting, I sent away letters, I made phone calls to the numbers that were on the search engine sites, and nothing, no response. And I had to turn in my manuscript this particular week. And I was so upset because this is such a great story that I couldn't I couldn't put it in the book. I had to have to withdraw it from the book because she couldn't give me permission. And so all of a sudden, the night before I had to turn the manuscript in, guess who called?
Oh, that's supposed to be.
Barbara Kaminsky called. She said to me, Dr. Obaba, I got a letter from you about 6 months ago, and I thought I was going to call you right away, but I kind of put it off. And I realized that, you know, it's been a while, and you don't mind if I, you know, call you now. And I said, oh, my goodness, you don't know what a coincidence this is that you would call. She gave me her permission, and I was able to submit her story. The story is very interesting. She was a young lady that developed multiple sclerosis and had all the complications. She had decreased vision and legal blindness. She had paralyzed diaphragm. She required a tracheostomy, which is a tube into the neck to help her breathe. She had braces on. Ultimately, she couldn't walk. She was having recurrent infections. There was just a whole host of things. And Dr. Marshall, who was my friend that took care of her, finally enrolled her in hospice, which means that he has to certify that she has less than 6 months to live. And when the pastor visited her, Dr. Marshall visited her, they thought that would be the last time they would visit her because she was going downhill so rapidly. What was interesting then, about the same time, a radio show was having prayer sessions for people that were in desperate straits. And so they had they solicited prayers for her. And a couple of days after the radio show, maybe a week or so after the radio show, Barbara Kaminsky was in her bedroom, lying in bed and you know, expecting not to live for very much longer. And her aunt came in with this big bag of letters that for people that had offered prayers for her, and it was so heavy she could hardly carry it. She brought it into the room, and they sat talking, and they were really pleased that everyone had said a prayer for her that had heard the radio show. And all of a sudden, she heard a voice in the room that no one else heard. And the voice said, young lady, something like, young lady, get up and walk. She immediately said to her aunt, I heard the voice of God. Tell me to get up. And she got out of bed. She stood up. She took her braces off. The occupational therapist. That was there. Ran up to her and said, you can't take your oxygen off. You're not going to be able to breathe. And Barbara Kaminsky took her oxygen off, walked into the next room. Her parents were there. She was so excited that she was able to sit and stand up. She bounced on the couch about 20 times, up and down and up and down. The parents were crying. They offered a prayer of thankfulness that she was literally cured. She wasn't short of breath. She was able to breathe well. Her vision came back. Her strength was back. She even did a little ballet, some ballet moves that she had remembered from high school in the room for her parents. The next day was church in the evening. They had church service in the evening. And Barbara decided to go to church, and she was very, very spiritual, very religious, and very closely connected to all the people in the church, including the pastor, who had been to visit her a couple of days before and felt that she was not going to live for probably more than a week or so. And so she didn't have any clothes to wear because her mother had given all of her clothes away because she knew she would never wear clothes again because she was so sick. So she had to borrow some clothes from the neighbor. And that's why she became late and going to church. And when she entered the church building, she stood there for a minute in the foyer where the pastor could see her. He was doing some announcements at the pulpit, and he just stopped talking. He couldn't speak. He thought he was seeing a ghost. And she walked into the church. Everyone turned around to see her, and there were whispers all over the church. Is that Barbara Kaminsky? I thought she was dead. I thought she was in hospice. And suddenly, as if directed by a mysterious divine hand, the whole congregation began to sing Amazing Grace. Can you imagine a person who had expected to die, the whole church singing Amazing Grace, and the pastor standing there, not able to speak. He was in such shock. So
such incredible. I mean, this one got me.
Makes you want to cry.
I know. It just, oh my goodness. I mean, it's like something out of a movie, but this really happened. I mean, this woman was healed. I mean, from death's door. She was taken back into life. And to show up at the church like that and walk. I mean, this is a woman who couldn't walk. She was bedridden. I mean, walk into the church. Unbelievable. I mean, just, oh, I mean, this is what gives people hope. This is what does it.
Sure.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. And what a beautiful story. And thank God she called you to give you permission so we could all read this. Oh, goodness.
What a quote coincidence, huh, Pat?
That's some kind of coincidence, I'll tell you. That was no coincidence, huh? It was all part and parcel of it.
She decided after that experience to dedicate her life to helping others, and she indeed has. Over the last 20-some years, she's married to a minister in out east. She's dedicated her life to help her congregation, and she does a youth program, and she does amazing things to help people, and she's dedicated her life to do that.
Oh, so, shining example of spirit in action. Well, we're going to take a short break, everybody, so just stay tuned. This is a memorable show, so we will be back in just a few minutes. You are listening to Supernatural Girls Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone, to Supernatural Girls Radio. I am your host, Patricia Baker, and I'm here with my co-host, Patricia Kirkman, PK, and our incredible guest. We are so honored to have with us tonight,
Dr. J.
Kolbaba, who is the author of this book that is amazing.
Yes. This in case you're interested in what it looks like, it's quick to find.
There it is. Miraculous experiences. Doctors are hesitant to share with their patients or anyone. And somehow, Dr. Kolbaba has managed to gain their trust and have them speak out about these experiences. So good for you, Dr. Kolbaba. Yeah. Now, I've got a question here. I think you've already answered it, but I'm going to bring it up again because it's an important one. Okay. Christian is writing, is Dr. Kolbaba still actively collecting more stories from patients?
Absolutely, yes. I'm writing another book, and we are working on a television series, so we'll need some stories for the television series too. So I'm interested in any stories that you have. You can log on to our website, physiciansuntoldstories.com, write a little blurb about that, and we'll either call you or communicate with you to get some details. So I'm very interested in stories you can't explain scientifically.
Oh, that's terrific.
Fabulous.
Yes.
Terrific. What a fabulous gift to the public.
Yes. Wonderful. Wonderful.
That is now, for sure.
Here is a statement. This is an interesting one from Sky33, who said, I have heard that voice, the voice that we were just talking about that Barbara heard, in March of 2000, when the doctor said, without surgery, I will die very soon.
You've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my husband and kids just gave me an executive order. Stylish new outfits now. Where do I go?
Get to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, get up to 50% off store-wide during Old Navy's big President's Day sale.
Up to 50% off store-wide? I won't veto that.
Old Navy's fashion-forward jeans start at just $15 for adults, $10 for kids, and colorful fleece starts at just $15 for adults, $12 for kids at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. But hurry, the sale ends soon.
Well, just call me Shopper-in-Chief. We're going to Old Navy now.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 212 through 220. Select styles only.
The voice told me in a very strict way not to have the surgery. I heard it three times. Bottom line, I'm still here. And I no longer fear death. What a wonderful story, huh?
It's a great story. It's a great story. I think funny things happen to us in this life that we can't explain. And I think it all points to something that's higher than us. Most of the docs call it God. You can call it whatever you like, but I think there's something else out there that we can't explain. But we get touched by that hand periodically, and it's amazing that happens.
Now, you've personally been touched by that hand. Tell us about that for you. What happens?
Yes.
It happened more than once, so tell us what you can.
There's a number of times that's happened to me, and most of the doctors that I talk with have had just one amazing experience, but you know, many have had little kinds of experiences. there's a couple of things that have happened to me. I think one of them that was most amazing was a bus incident with my daughter, Lucci. Lucci is a show choir girl for high school, and so she was singing and dancing with the show choir, and we had a big show choir competition in near La Crosse, Wisconsin, which is about 5 hours from Chicago. So they took off in the bus. We followed them about an hour later. And about an hour into the trip, or maybe a little longer, we got a phone call from Lucci, and she sounded a little strange on the phone. She has a cell. All the girls have cell phones, obviously, as you know. And she said, "Dad, there was a little fire in the bus, but we, you know, we're okay, and don't worry, we're fine now." And so we didn't think too much about it until we came about an hour later to a scene on the top of a hill. There were police cars all over the place, fire engines. Mm-hmm. And there was a bus that was a big coach bus that was burning with black smoke coming from out of the bus. The whole bus was incinerated. Ah. And my wife said, "That's Lucci's bus."
My God.
That was her bus. And we found out later that what happened was that there was a flat tire in the back of the bus that the bus driver and no one recognized. They heard a bang and then nothing happened. But the rubber from the tire must have caused enough friction to cause a fire. The bus driver, when he realized that, pulled the bus over. And there were two buses involved, so the second bus that was behind them saw how big the fire and how rapidly the fire was progressing, and they started to text the girls in the first bus, get out, there's a fire in your bus. And all of a sudden, the bus started to fill with smoke, the floor became hot, and the girls started to scream. They had to get out. My daughter was one of the last ones in the bus, in the back of the bus.
Oh, my.
And so she was frightened to death that she was going to be burned. You could see the flames on the side of the bus. And then something very interesting happened that the people in the back, in the other bus, observed. And that is, the flames seemed to die down and just stay at a quiet, low-level amount of fire for quite a while, and every girl was able to get out of the bus. When the last girl stepped off the bus, the kids in the first and the second bus said a wall of flames swept through the bus and incinerated everything in the bus.
My God.
And that was the costumes, everything. But none of the girls was hurt in the least. It was a miracle. And then,
it was, because there was no reason that fire would have been stopped for a moment. I mean, it really did come to a halt, doesn't do that.
No.
Fire exponentially.
Not that I've ever seen.
Like every second. Yeah. So that in and of itself is just an amazing, amazing miracle. And they all got off the bus safely. Thank God.
Yeah, wow. That's not the end of the story, though. Interestingly, they went to the hotel.
Yeah, some more.
That night, it got in about 2 o'clock a.m., and we thought, oh, this is too bad. Everything was burned up in the bus, the costumes, the underclothes, everything, except the instruments. And the choir director, she made an announcement. We were expecting to say, you know, well, pack up your things. In the morning, we're going to take off and go back home. But she surprised us. She said, we're going on stage. Whatever we can do, we're going on stage tomorrow. We're going to compete. We were shocked because there were no costumes and nothing.
Nothing to work with.
That set into into motion a series of events that were as miraculous as the bus fire, and that is they went to the home school to see if they had any costumes. Well, there were 50 girls. They had 25 costumes, not enough for the whole crowd. And then someone went to our high school in Wheaton. They found 25 costumes that were almost identical to the costumes that were at the school.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
One was purple sequin and one was white sequin, matching, but a nice contrast. And they looked just like they were paired together. The next morning, my wife was in charge of costuming, and so she was taking in seams and out seams because these were unfitted costumes.
So much work to get that done. Oh. Usually that takes months.
Yeah, exactly. They use duct tape, safety pins. And the interesting thing, people showed up from the homes, that school, and also from all over with shoes, because the kids had no shoes. They were all burned up. And they would take off their shoes and say, you can wear my shoes for the show. Oh. One of the women in the room that was helping out with all the costuming said, this must be what heaven's like. People were so generous and kind, and everything was going really incredibly well. and they were able to perform and only an hour later than their scheduled time. They performed at noon that next day. And it's interesting that a coincidence maybe, Pat and PK, that one of the songs was about overcoming adversity. Interesting.
Oh, my.
How perfect that is.
After that song, there were no dry eyes in the whole audience. Mm-hmm. It was just an amazing song. And they sang it with such emotion that you can imagine the feeling in the audience at the time.
Oh, incredible.
At the end of the performance and at the end of the whole competition, there were the awards. And there were third place was announced, second place was announced, and first place was announced, and we didn't win. But the girls thought that they had done their best and that they did the best they could. Mm-hmm. Then they realized that wasn't the end. They brought a huge trophy onto the stage for the grand champions. That was announced.
Ah.
We won the grand champion.
Isn't that
incredible? God.
Ah. My goodness gracious.
Amazing.
That was an amazing event. My daughter came back to the homeroom. We said nothing. We just hugged each other. She'd survived the bus fire. They came through an amazing experience, and they won it all. So that was a competition that I'll never forget, and an amazing series of events that I think were divinely inspired.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely sounds that way. Definitely yes, sounds that way.
God's hand all the way through, from the beginning all the way to the end. Oh, my goodness. Just an incredible, another story.
Incredible, that's for sure.
That brought tears to our eyes. Just amazing. Now, here's another actually a question coming from the same person who wrote about getting guidance from the voice. And Sky33 would like to know, have you had any cases where the patient went against doctor's life and death advice, and the patient had an experience, be it God or ETs or angels, and the patient listened to the voice instead of the doctor's and was fine?
Yes, we have. There are lots of experiences like that. The most significant one that comes to mind is a case that was told me by my friend, Dr. Richard Jorgensen, who's a general surgeon. And he, one night, had a busy day. This was a very busy day. He was exhausted. He went right to sleep. Doctors usually don't have trouble sleeping. They go right to sleep after a busy day. And he woke with a cold sweat about 4 o'clock in the morning with a dream that was just so vivid that he couldn't get it out of his mind. His best friend, a judge, an appellate judge, he dreamt was dead in a coffin in a funeral home. They could visualize the people lining up to see him. He could visualize his face in the coffin. And it was so, in most dreams, when you wake up in the morning, they go out of your mind.
Quickly, yes.
But this one was so dramatic and so real that he couldn't forget it. It kind of upset him the whole day. A few months before that, he had been talking with someone that told him that if you have a dream, the earth spirit tells you if it's a dream about someone else, you have to tell them. So mm-hmm. he felt somewhat compelled to tell the judge. So he didn't know how to call up a good friend and say, I saw you dead in my dream.
Oh, really? Thank you very much.
How do you do that?
Yes.
That's the same response that he got when he called the judge. He said, my friend, I had a dream about you last night, and I dreamt that you were dead. And the judge laughed, and he said, that was kind of a crazy dream. But Dr. Jorgensen said, if you would do just a favor for me, just get a physical, make sure that you're healthy, that you're okay. And the judge said, well, that wouldn't be unreasonable. I can do that. I've not had a physical for many years, and I've been negligent, mm-hmm. and I should get a physical anyway. So he did. He went to a doctor that we all know very well, got a physical. It was perfectly fine. His heart was good. His blood tests were fine. EKG, chest x-ray, all the tests you do for a physical were perfectly fine. The doctor even told him, don't listen to this crazy surgeon, Dr. Jorgensen, anymore.
Oh, no.
Because he doesn't know what he's talking about. You're perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with your heart. Go on, live your life and be fine. Well, he thought that was okay. And then when Dr. Jorgensen heard that, he got that sick feeling in his stomach again, that there is something that he needed to do, that this wasn't right, that the dream was too vivid, too real, and too emotional. So he called him up again, and he said, Judge, I know that you did what I said you should do, but I'd like you to do one more thing. Could you just see my cardiologist? Just humor me. Just take one visit, see him, and then I'll leave you alone forever. I won't talk about this ever again. And he felt somewhat guilty because if nothing came with this, he'd feel a little strange trying to force him to see more doctors when he didn't need to.
Yes, exactly.
So the judge went to see the cardiologist. The cardiologist did a stress test and some other tests. He failed the stress test badly, was put in the hospital for an angiogram. The angiogram showed a major lesion called the widowmaker, which is a main artery that supplies virtually the whole heart with blood, and multiple other lesions that were very, very dangerous. They took him to surgery the next day because they were afraid to wait longer than a day because he might have a fatal heart attack just in waiting. He did a bypass. He lived for many, many years after that. Was very thankful to Dr. Jorgensen for listening to his dream and listening to his intuition, and going against the voice of the very excellent internist that had seen the judge and advised against him having anything else done. So there's the case.
It's just beautiful. You know, it's such a beautiful story. And again, it's a great, great lesson to all of us to keep following that voice, because here he had gone to the doctor once and everything was fine. Yes. So it would have been easy for this doctor to drop everything at that point and say, okay, I just must have had a weird dream, end of story. Yes. But he kept listening internally to that voice that said, no, there's something else here. And that is a good rule of thumb, is that if there is a dream that is that vivid and makes sense, you know, in that dream, it makes sense. You know, he was seeing a body in a coffin and people lining up to go view the body. I mean, that's not usually what you see in a dream. I was a dream therapist for years, so I know you usually have very disjointed, disconnected images. Yes. And when the images follow a line of thought that's very much in line with everyday life, you really need to pay attention. Thank God he did. Wow.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, one of the themes, there's some themes that emerge from a book. I just collected a bunch of stories, and I didn't have any specific requirement for the stories, except they had to give me goosebumps or make me cry out of emotion. And those are the stories I included in the book. But it was interesting that many of the stories involved people listening to a little voice or the emotion or a premonition. And I think that became a theme that I hope people listen to. I hope that people realize that if they see a stranger and across the street and they have this voice or some intuition that says, I need to go meet that person or talk with them or do something, at least listen to that and pay attention, because sometimes I think those are things that are more than just a little feeling. I think those are things that someone upstairs is telling us that there is something that we need to be doing, and then we become a servant of a higher power.
And that's where the real power is. And it's so important to know that there are doctors that are listening to that voice. Because, I mean, it's, you guys have, men and women in the medical field, you have such a tough job. You're trying to figure out these medical mysteries. And I think lots of these illnesses are becoming more mysterious, especially the autoimmune group, as we go forward. It's very tough to diagnose a lot of these things. Yes. So, you know, when you have that connection with the higher power, then you have an advantage. And it must give you some comfort as a doctor that you have that advantage.
You know, I think we still obviously believe in the scientific method. We believe in modern medicine and the use of radiology and all the things that we have at our disposal. But there are some circumstances where you just have some feeling or I think directed, and you don't want to do any crazy tests or anything like that. But I think if you have those feelings, I think we should listen to them. My partner, Dr. Boren, is a good example of that. He tells stories about pre-opping a fellow that had was going to have a total joint surgery. And he felt that he was cleared for surgery, and then he had this voice nagging in the back of his head, this guy needs a stress test, guy needs a stress test. So he finally called him up and said, I've got this feeling you just need to have a stress test, and I'm sorry to have to put you through this. And so he did. He had a stress test, and he flunked the stress test again.
Oh, no.
Bypass surgery that saved his life, because had he gone to surgery, he probably would have not survived the surgery. So there are things and that we can't explain that I think help guide us at times. But again, most of us, most doctors believe in the scientific method, believe in all the things that we're taught in medical school. But there's a dimension here that is a little beyond that I think we just need to pay a little bit of attention to. And I'd encourage other people to pay attention to their feelings too, mm-hmm. In certain circumstances.
Well, I think that's great advice, and it's great advice for patients also, because that goes both ways. It's not just the doctors that can tune in to the higher power, but it's also patients. And as Sky 33 brought up, he listened, or she, I'm not sure, to that loud voice that said, don't have the surgery, and turned out to be fine. So, yeah, we need to work together, I think, patients and doctors, as team players, yes. So that we can find the best treatment and the best answer to some of these medical mysteries. And everybody's different. You know that better than anybody, right?
Yes.
It's scary when you take a look at the things that we're given information about and how often we disregard it. Mm. And when you follow through, it's just like a blessing, such a blessing.
Yeah. That is.
And again, we're not given direct information on everything, but there are times when I think we need to pay attention to some of the things that are telling us in the back of our head. Some of the docs in their stories really couldn't help themselves do these things, like Dr. Hyman climbing up the mountain. He just felt so compelled. But I think there are lots of times when we have little naggy thoughts that aren't that compelling. And I think we should listen to those in many cases too, especially if they're telling us to do something that makes sense or that's good or that is not harmful to anyone.
Yeah, I think many times we get that fear factor and we can imagine something much worse than it actually is because of that, what we'll call that gut feeling.
Yes.
And if we really pay attention to it, it gets us out of harm's way.
Right.
I think it does sometimes, yes.
Yes, it does. It gives us a whole other insight to some of these medical conundrums that we're facing today. And again, you know, as patients, we don't know sometimes what to ask for. You have access as a doctor to all of these tests and things, and we rely on the medical profession to get us to get the right tests and then to the right diagnosis. But I think in this day and age, it takes more, even though our tests have improved and we have more technology than we've ever had before. We still need that connection to the higher power to make some of these things right.
Yes.
I gave a talk the other day to a religious church group, and the topic was, in this modern medical world, with all the technology that we have, is there still room for spirituality in medicine? And my overwhelming response was, yes, there is. There is still room for prayer. There's still room for spirituality. There's still room for believing in something else that is the master healer, and not just us.
Beautiful. Yes, it's so true. Now, have you ever had, you must have had some of these experiences with your 7 children?
All kinds of things happen with 7 children. It seems like happening. I think the most spectacular was the Luchi bus fire. I think
that was the most.
And
that must have been, when that happened, you must have been elated for days. I mean, beyond the experience of her life being saved and then winning the grand championship and seeing how miraculous all of this was, that must have just given you such a buoyancy for such a long time.
Pat, it was a mixed feeling, because the mixed feeling was a terror that we could have lost our daughter that night.
Yes.
And the emotion of, you can imagine kind of trembling inside, thinking she could have been burned up on that bus. She was one of the last ones to get out of the bus, and she could have been incinerated and in that night. Mm-hmm. And then the elation of having everything come together so amazingly well the next day, so that they can perform within hours of when they were supposed to be performing, and only about 8 hours after everything had been destroyed. So there was elation and also great emotion. And I think my wife probably had more of the anxiety emotion.
Yeah.
I had a lot of the elation. But still, when you think about what could have happened to your daughter, because she could have been burned up in the bus, that was just so scary.
Yes.
Especially terrifying. After she says there was a little fire on the bus.
Yeah.
And hearing that, I'm going, oh my God. And then when you saw it, that had to be devastating when you saw the bus.
Exactly. Yeah,
the coach told her not to frighten the parents. So they were all stepping to say that there was not the bus burn up. It's not sitting here with five fire trucks and 20 police cars.
It's just a little fire.
Really? Just a little fire.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take another very short commercial break. If you have a question for Dr. Kolbaba, then please write it in the chat room at irnchat.com. That is irnchat.com. We'll ask your question on your behalf. And we have lots more stories to talk about tonight. So stay tuned, everybody. You are listening to Supernatural Girls Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone, to Supernatural Girls Radio. I'm your host, Patricia Baker. I'm here with my co-host, PK, and our amazing guest tonight.
Yes.
Dr.
How lucky
Scott
we are.
J. Kolbaba. He is the author of an amazing book, and you all have to get it and read it. You have to. It is so great. Physicians, Untold Stories. Miraculous experiences doctors are hesitant to share with their patients or anyone. What a Christmas or Hanukkah gift or whatever kind of holiday you celebrate.
But get them Kleenex to go with it. You've got to have Kleenex to go with the book.
That's right.
Not
lots of Kleenex.
It is.
And it's
absolutely
happy tears. It's happy tears.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
It's a feel good to the nth degree.
It's great. Now, I have a question for you from the chat room, and this is from Carol Carl. She would like to know, what is your analysis of why mainstream medicine in the Western world shuns this approach? Is it based on the notion that each individual is capable of accessing healing without the help of doctors?
I think the question was why do doctors and many others shun the spiritual side of medicine? And I think we are all trained to do the scientific method, which I think is very reasonable. The scientific method is great. You believe in experiments, and you believe that certain things happen when you do certain procedures and tests and so forth, but when you've been in practice for a while, you begin to realize there are things that happen that just don't fit into the scientific method totally. And so, and those are a little scary. It's a little scary to say that not everything is scientifically based. And it's hard to come to that realization unless you've actually experienced it or have other doctors that have experienced it too. So I think medicine, rightly so, is scientifically based, but there is a room, I think, for spirituality in medicine because there's something else out there that doctors experience. And there are certain places where they experience it more than others. ER and the intensive care units are places where they have more of these unusual experiences. And the literature from the emergency rooms is complete with stories about these kinds of events. And so I think it's coming around more and more, and I think more and more doctors and more institutions and medical centers are going to be realizing that there's something to spirituality and to prayer and to believing and having a positive attitude.
Right.
That's wonderful change for everybody. It just creates so many more positive possibilities.
Yes.
It really does. And now in your book, you also have an interesting story. I mean, all the stories are just incredible, and they're all running through my mind right now. But you have a story from a chiropractor who goes to a networking meeting and has kind of takes him off in a different direction. Can you tell us that story? Because so far we've been talking about physical healings, but this is emotional and mental healing. So tell us about this one. That's great.
Our chiropractor friend was starting out in business in the local community here and wanted to network and develop more referral sources and so forth. And that was reasonable when you first start out. You don't have very many patients and you want to make sure that people know who you are and that you're a reasonable person. So he attended this meeting that was attended by all the leaders and the medical professionals in the area. And he thought, this is a great opportunity to network with everyone. And so he was very excited and very nervous about going to the meeting. And at the meeting, he was sitting next to a person that did a crisis line. And the person in the crisis line started to tell him stories about the things that he'd experienced. And they got into some very interesting stories, and the chiropractor was about ready to get up and excuse himself. And the crisis worker said, let me tell you about one story about a person that I took care of that was depressed, and how I recognized that they were depressed and how I solved their issues. And it became a fascinating story, and it went on and on and on. And he suddenly realized everyone was leaving, and the lunch was over, and he hadn't networked with anyone. And he thought, what a wasted lunch. I'd been sitting with this fellow telling me about depression and how depressing it was to learn about this and not have a chance to network with anyone. So he went back to his practice, and he was really bummed out because he thought he'd wasted his day. And he finished seeing patients. The last patient he had was a fellow that had been working as a laborer, was really not real happy with his job and had hurt his back, and he helped him a bit. And so he finished seeing him, and it was a late night. He wanted to get back home because his dinner was waiting on the table, and he was ready to close up shop after the fellow had left. And he just got this feeling that he needed to do something else. So he closed the door, went back into his office, turned the light on, and sat there for a minute wondering what he was supposed to be doing. And then he decided to, he felt that he had to call this last patient he had for some reason and see how he was doing. And so he called the individual, and he said, well, I just felt I needed to call you. Now, he's never called a patient like this before. He never had a inkling or a premonition or a desire to call a patient right after he'd seen him. And the fellow said, I've been really thinking about how tough life is, thank you for calling me, and I think I'll get better and so forth. And so that conversation ended, and he went home and thought about how bad his day was and told his wife, and a couple months later he saw on the schedule the individual that had seen him that night that he had attended the luncheon. And as soon as he walked into his exam room, he broke out in tears. And my chiropractor friend thought, this is unusual. Why would he break out in tears? And he said, when you called me that night, I was ready to commit suicide. I'd had everything laid out on the table. I was ready to take a bottle of pills, and I had to put the pills down as I reached for the phone to talk with you. And your demeanor and your kindness and your discussion with me made me reconsider what I was going to do. And I decided then that maybe life was worthwhile. And I decided after I talked with you to check myself into the psych unit, and you literally saved my life. And suddenly my chiropractor friend realized that a day that he thought was the worst day of his life may have been the best day of his life, when he saved an individual's life who came to him very depressed. He intervened using some of the same techniques that he had learned that day at the luncheon. So what a coincidence that it was that he had happened to talk with a crisis worker and then faced exactly the same type of crisis and was able to talk this individual out of committing suicide, even though he didn't know that at the time, and saved a life. Yeah. So,
what a beautiful experience. Yes. Mm-hmm. And how often do we all walk down a path where we think something didn't turn out the way we wanted it to? But here we go. This man saved a life. I mean, just incredible, incredible story.
Yeah, there are times in everyone's life.
You've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my husband and kids just gave me an executive order. Stylish new outfits now. Where do I go?
Get to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, get up to 50% off store-wide during Old Navy's big President's Day sale.
Up to 50% off store-wide? I won't veto that.
Old Navy's fashion-forward jeans start at just $15 for adults, $10 for kids. And colorful fleece starts at just $15 for adults, $12 for kids at Old Navy and oldnavy.com. But hurry, the sale ends soon.
Well, just call me Shopper-in-Chief. We're going to Old Navy now.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 212 through 220. Select styles only.
I'm sure that we have days where we think we didn't do anything good, that we just got through the day, and in retrospect you may realize that you did something that was truly amazing.
Yes.
I had an experience once in the office. It was a strange experience. One of my patients was had a bad cancer and was admitted to a different hospital, not the hospital I attend. And he called me up while he was there. And he said he was, and this was a day like no other in my office. It was a crazy day. I was an hour behind. There were patients all over the place. Everyone was mad at me for being late.
And so, of course.
Of course. So this person calls me up and he says, Doc, I'm at this other hospital. I know you know that and so forth. And I did. And he said, I need to know if I'm going to die or not. And I thought, I wish I had more time. I didn't say that to him, but I'm thinking to myself, I wish I had more time to call his doctor and talk about it and so forth. But yeah, you make some time. And I called his oncologist and I said, you know, what's going on? What are his numbers? And he told me what his kidney function was. He was basically in renal failure. He was going to die in the next couple of days. And so I called him back and I said, you know, I'm sorry, John. You know, and it was hard for me to do this in the middle of all this craziness happening around me to really, and it's hard to say to a person, you're going to die. And I had to tell him directly, you're going to die in the next couple of days. And I felt so bad about doing that. And that was the icing on the cake for the horrible bad day.
Yeah.
He did indeed die within the next couple of days. And a week later, I attended his funeral. And as I walked into the funeral home, the entire family came up to me and hugged me. And I thought, what did I do to deserve this? And they said, thank you for telling John that he was going to die. Because when he found that out, he suddenly became at peace with himself. He called for the priest to get left and rights.
Oh, how wonderful.
And you made him so calm. He was so anxious before that because he didn't know what was happening to him. After you talked with him, he knew what was going on. The entire family was at peace with the situation. We said our prayers. We said our goodbyes. It was the most beautiful thing that had ever happened to us. Even though he did die, it was a beautiful way to go, and you made it all possible. And so what turned out, what I thought was the worst day of my life, turned out to be an incredible blessing for he and his family, unbeknownst to me. So I think some days are like that, and I think we're called upon to do some things that we don't realize until later on in retrospect what we've done.
That's beautiful.
That is.
I mean, to us as patients, I mean, doesn't it make sense that we do want to know the truth? We do want to know what's happening. It doesn't help us to be kept in the dark and to be left wondering, which I think that's worse, you know. So thank God you were able, as hard as it was, like you said, to tell somebody that they're going to pass away, that you gave him, what a gift you gave him. Incredible.
That was a hard call, a really hard call to make. I wondered if I did any good or did any bad that day, and it turns out that was just the thing he needed. So,
goodness.
Just knowing, because many times people have something they'd like to do, but they put it off because they think they've got tomorrow.
Yes.
And being able to finish something or complete something or to say something. That makes a difference for the rest of our lives.
Oh, yes. Yes, exactly. Now, do you have a favorite story in the book?
Oh, there are a couple of favorite stories, but I've got a kind of a strange one that's my favorite story. And
okay, let's hear it.
That's my Grandma O'Hanlon story. Grandma O'Hanlon was a grandmother for Dr. Heitzler's wife, Joan. And Dr. Heitzler delivered a couple of our kids, and they're still walking and talking, so he did a great job. They may be partially brain damaged, though, but like most kids.
And they'll blame you, of course.
Yes. Joan became very, very close to her grandmother, Grandma O'Hanlon. Grandma O'Hanlon was a midwife who delivered lots of babies over her career, and she was an incredibly spiritual person. She would work for free if a family couldn't afford her, and she'd stay with the family for a few weeks after the delivery to help out with the baby. And so she was an incredible person. And she eventually got old and had to retire from delivering babies. And she then lived with Joan, who was a little girl at the time, and her mother. And Joan would say, if I could make it to Grandma Hanlon's lap and I was in trouble with my mom, I know I'd be safe. So Joan is delivering her fifth child. The Heitzlers, I think, have eight children. This was her fifth child she was delivering, and the delivery went pretty well. Dr. Heitzler was there because he's an obstetrician, but he refused to do the delivery. It was his partner that did the delivery. And everything went well until after the delivery, there was a minor complication. They had to do a minor procedure on their uterus, and Joan was in a great deal of pain, so she asked for some pain medication. And at the time, Trilene was the drug to use. That's a drug administered by mask, and that puts a woman into a deep sleep. Mm-hmm. And then when they take the Trilene off, they wake up. So they were about ready to put the Trilene on Joan's face when she suddenly saw her grandmother, Grandma Hanlon, walk into the room, who stood at the foot of the bed with her typical polka dot dress and her hair up in a bun and her old lady shoes and her white sweater vest that she liked to wear. And she shook her head to Joan, don't take the Trilene. And Joan didn't understand why, but she listened to her and pushed the Trilene away. Well, no one realized that Joan had eaten a very large meal right before her delivery. And about a minute after she pushed the Trilene away, she vomited the entire meal. And she'd been unconscious.
Oh my
word. With the mask on, she would have aspirated, and it could have been very serious or life-threatening.
She could have died. Yeah.
She died.
My goodness.
Mm-hmm. So Joan says she made it back to Grandma Hanlon's lap one last time, overcoming time and eternity, because Grandma Hanlon had died 22 years before.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that something?
That's one of my favorites.
Yes, I can see amazing. Why.
Yeah. Yes.
How wonderful.
Love overcoming all barriers there. Yes. So they were very close.
That's
and
fabulous.
She saw her saying no to the anesthesia. Yes. And she knew, this is not for me, and pushed it away. Saved her life. Oh,
it did.
Incredible.
It did.
Amazing.
Incredible. Yes. Yes, we have so many of our people in the audience who want to know, you know, can I see somebody who's passed? Can I look forward to seeing a loved one, you know, that in a dream or something? And here's proof. Here's a wonderful story that it did happen, and it saved Joan's life. It's just incredible.
There were a number of stories that came out. And again, I didn't select these stories for any particular cause. I just selected the ones that I thought that touched me so much. But there were a number of stories that happened to come out about people that had passed that had participated in our lives. And one of the ones that I like so much, my editor didn't love this one, but I love it, and I had to put it in the book. It's about it's a dime story. And Steve Graham is an ER doc that told me the story, and he was seeing a person in the emergency department who had an abdominal complaint, but he noticed on his arm was tattooed a dime, and he thought this is a little unusual, and you know, he didn't want to be too prying, but his curiosity got the best of him, and he said, you know, I noticed that dime on your arm. What's the purpose? What's the reason for that dime? He said, my son is a great coin collector, and he loved to collect coins, and his favorite coin was a dime. And I think it was his favorite because every time he'd go to somewhere special, he'd find a dime. He'd go to a Cubs game in Chicago, and he'd pull up the seat, and there'd be a dime on the floor. Or he'd go to a nice restaurant, and he'd move the plate, and there'd be a dime underneath the plate or something like that. And he started to collect those dimes. And he said, tragically, my son a number of years ago was killed in the expressway. And ever since then, I've been really sad and upset. But I found dimes in special places, and now I'm finding these dimes all over the place, and they occur when there would be a special event that my son would love to be part of.
Oh.
And he said, so I had this dime tattooed on my arm to let him know that I know that he's looking out for me and that he participates in my life, and I want him to show him that I know that, and that's why I had this dime tattooed to my arm. Dr. Graham thought that was a nice story, and he wished he could believe it. But, you know, he didn't say anything derogatory, but he just couldn't quite believe a story like that. And so he finished seeing the individual and sent him on his way, and then went back to the doctor's dictation room, which is only open for doctors, and was about ready to pull out the chair and sit down and dictate the note. And there was something shiny on the floor when he pulled the chair out. He looked down.
Oh, my word.
A dime.
There it was. Yes.
Amazing.
And he said to himself, you know, thank you, Robbie, for Robbie was the name of the boy. Thank you, Robbie, for helping me believe.
Oh, how special.
That is great.
The interesting addendum to that story is my wife, as I mentioned to you before, is always my editor, my initial editor, and she'd tell me if the story was good or not. And she read that story and thought, this is a great story. I love this story. And she went into the next room after she put the story down and looked at the counter, which had been empty before, and guess what was on the counter?
Oh, my word.
Oh, my goodness.
How fabulous.
Yeah, that was interesting. So
transcending time and space. Mm-hmm. What a beautiful message. That's a beautiful message. Yes. This is incredible. I want to hear more stories. I read all the stories, but hearing you speak them, it just adds a whole other dimension. Oh, I hope you'll do an audio of this book so that people can also just listen to your voice as you tell these wonderful stories.
We hope to do that. Yes, we do eventually. So
yes, it would be great. Yes. Here's another question from the chat room. They want to know, do you have a sense of what percentage of patients want to know if they are facing imminent demise? Is that something people generally want to know?
I think they do. I think most people, if they are really close to death, want to know that they are. Many patients don't want to know how serious an illness is, however. So in many cases, patients will kind of not want to know how serious their cancer is or how that they have Alzheimer's disease and things like that. But I think most people that are very close to death want to know that they are very close to death. I think that's my experience, at least.
Yeah. Unfinished business.
Yeah, I think that's the reason. I think they want to say goodbye to their friends. Mm-hmm. They want to tell people that they are grateful for what they've done throughout their life. And I think that's mm-hmm. one of the things that they want to do, make sure that they're okay with their whatever they believe, mm-hmm. whatever spirit they believe in or God. They want to make their peace with God. And I think that's why they want to know if death is imminent.
Now, I'm sorry. Go ahead, PK.
I was just going to say I've noticed that different ones will talk about a person holding on, family members are coming. And I know my grandmother's case, my uncles were all over the country and she became very ill. They were coming in and she waited until the last one came. As soon as he came in, she was gone.
We see that all the time. Mm-hmm. That's very true. I think people can muster a certain amount of adrenaline and everything else to hold on until they've said goodbye to their loved ones and mm-hmm. then they let themselves go. So I think people can to a certain extent determine the timing of their death. And I think that's a very, very common occurrence that I'm waiting to see my uncle come back or my child or whatever mm-hmm. from a long distance. And then within hours or a day, they're gone. And that's, mm-hmm. we see that all the time. So
it's amazing and so grateful that they could make that connection.
Yes.
It helps a lot. Now, have the doctors that you've spoken with, has anybody seen a spirit leave a body upon death?
You know, I don't know. I've not witnessed that. I don't think the doctors have mentioned that to me. So some people have said that they see that, but none of the doctors mentioned that to me, and I have not witnessed that mm-hmm. myself.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, it's an interesting occurrence. I guess people have tried to measure the weight of the spirit right. and things like that, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. Certainly some of these physicians have seen other spirits, right? They've seen other entities mm-hmm. come into a room or something indescribable happens? Does a room get colder or do they feel something they just can't explain that there's a presence?
Yeah, we've had a couple doctors that have seen visions of spirits that have gone or have been visited by premonition or a feeling from the person that has just recently passed. There was nothing about a cold room or anything like that. Mm-hmm. My one doctor was very close to a missionary doctor, and the missionary doctor always wanted to show her that there was something into the afterlife, that you know, when people die, there is something that they go to. And he said he would always, as the crowning example of his missionary life, he would show her that. And he happened to die one day when she was on vacation, and when she was going into the to the hospital one morning, he appeared to her in a vision, mm-hmm. and she said that his countenance was that of one that had satisfied himself, that he had done the crowning thing of his whole career, wow. that he had shown her that there is something after this
life after death. That's beautiful. Well, Dr. Kobaba, we cannot thank you enough for joining us this evening. This evening has just gone way too fast.
Yes, it has.
We want to urge everybody to purchase your wonderful book, Physicians Untold Stories, Miraculous Experiences Doctors Are Hesitant to Share with Their Patients or Anyone. And if you have a story to share, then please reach out to Dr. Kobaba. He wants to hear it. And we'll be back next week, everybody. We have Betty Andreasen Luca and her husband, Bob Luca. They have a new book out, Lifting the Veil. They're going to debut this on our show next yes. week, everybody. So we'll be back. Until then, we'll see you on the Blue Highway. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Get to Old Navy 2 days only, today and tomorrow. Get 50% off all fleece sweatshirts. That's right. All fleece sweatshirts are 50% off in stores and at oldnavy.com. Hurry, ends tomorrow. Valid 2/18 to 2/19, excludes active, licensed, and in-store clearance.